Yesterday, we differentiated eating fads, popular diets, and those kinds of things from actual eating disorders.
Right.
And today, we're going to talk about the prevalence of eating disorders. And what we found is that it's just about as complicated as you can imagine.
What we found was a massive confusion.
Right.
It's like in Florida here, we fish with this monofilament. Well, I guess they do everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And it turns into knots very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what this reminded me of as I was going through these statistics to try to make sense out of them. There's so much information. There's so many different sources of information that it's very difficult to really sort through all of the data and make sense out of it and say, these are the prevalence rates for these various disorders. It's really a lot of information to wade through. So we're going to try to simplify it.
But we're going to try.
Yeah.
You know, it's really difficult. One of the things we were looking for are the prevalency rates overall of eating disorders overall in the United States.
Right. Go ahead and try to find that.
Man, that's really
difficult. But you know, it's 3%, it's 0.8%, and when you do an average, it loses its meaning.
Right.
I mean, you can't talk about an average. There are about seven or eight different feeding and eating disorders in DSM-5. Each has a different prevalence rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's different for men and women.
Right.
It's different for teenagers and adults and the elderly. So it's really hard to nail down a specific number. And you can't do averages. It's impossible to say what is the average number of eating disorders.
Right, and it's difficult to figure out how to differentiate them as well, because and we found some statistics that had it up to about 15 to 16% with eating disorders, and what it seems as though they did, and it's really difficult to tell, but what it seems as though is that they took the prevalency rates of all the individual eating disorders and just added them together.
Right.
Well, you know, I can understand sort of the potential point of that, but at the same time, you know, one can certainly meet criteria for two disorders at the same time.
Right. Now,
there's nothing that would make it to where you couldn't, for example, be diagnosed with both PICA and binge eating disorder, or for that matter, binge eating disorder and bulimia nervosa. So, just, you know, you may be doubling up some of your statistics when you do that.
That's right. But as we go through these data, the other issue is when you talk about prevalence, there's this issue of lifetime prevalence.
Right.
Okay, incidence is at a specific time. Prevalence is across time.
Right.
And so that's another thing that changes a bit. So typically, we're going to be talking about prevalence.
Mm-hmm.
That is, in the course of a lifetime, this is the percentage of people who are likely to have an eating disorder. Okay, so we'll narrow it down that much at least.
Right.
Okay.
So let's go through some of the specific disorders, and you know, recognizing that we haven't even really had a chance to talk about the specific disorders yet. Because of the way in which we were structuring the podcast this week, we were talking about prevalence first, and did not really anticipate it being this way as we were, you know, announcing it. So
this messy, right?
When we think about the disorders, let's just mention them real quickly. We have anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, other specified feeding or eating disorder, avoidant. Food avoidant or restrictive food intake disorder, and there's some others. There's like PICA and some others that we're not going to really go into as much.
But I love that last one.
Diabulimia. Diabulimia.
We had a patient years ago at the Children's Hospital of Austin, and she did that at the beginning of summer. She would call it bikini season.
Mm-hmm.
So to shape up her body, she would stop taking her insulin.
Right.
Of course,
this is a disorder that's in regards to people with diabetes who significantly restrict their insulin.
They stop taking their insulin. Yeah. or reduce it dramatically.
So yeah. that they can lose weight.
You lose weight quickly, but you damage your kidney. So right. every spring, she would lose weight and end up in the hospital because we had to keep her kidneys going. And she did it 2 or 3 years in a row when she was about 15 or 14, 15, 16. I think she finally got it under control, but during those years, it seemed like a sensible, for a kid that age, it might be a sensible thing to do.
Right.
So, but there's a lot more diabulimia. I mean, the rates are very high.
Right.
So when you put that in there, it increases the rates artificially.
Well, the rate is very high, but it's only talking about people with diabetes.
But it's that group, right.
Right. So, and it's not, diabulimia is not in the DSM-5.
It's not in DSM-5. So that's right. The other complication.
It's listed in some of the websites, but it's not a real, not really in the DSM-5. So
exactly.
We're going to focus on the others for today. So anorexia nervosa, that is probably the most commonly known eating disorder, and it
go ahead.
You look at these statistics and it's they split them up so finely.
Right.
We're pulling from the National Association of Anorexia Nervosa and Associated Disorders.
Right.
There's a website, and it's the link is posted in the show notes.
Right.
Less than 1% of American women suffer from anorexia at some point in their lifetime.
Less than 1%.
0.9%.
Right.
All right. We could just say 1%. 1% of the population of women in the United States will meet criteria for anorexia at some point in their life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It doesn't mean that they have it for their entire life. It just means at some point in their life, they'll meet criteria for
it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, it kind of breaks it down in different ways. It talks about, on this website, it talks about the mortality rates and things like that. About 20% of people with anorexia die by suicide, which is sad and unfortunate.
We have this phrase, I can't get my arms around this, you know, and This really is one of those things because it's about 1% of women in this study, but about 1.5% have bulimia. Okay,
right.
And when they say 1 in 5 are deaths by suicide, does that mean starve yourself to death, or does that mean by other means? Okay,
yeah, I don't know.
So you'd have to go into this literature. So you have to be very, very careful with these data, but I think it's safe to say that about 1% of females, and we're talking about female adolescents because that's about, it's a disorder of adolescence. It usually starts during adolescence, okay? It continues across the lifespan. And as we said yesterday, it recurs in late life, okay, in the elderly, because people begin, frequently begin to change their eating habits, particularly if they're living alone. They will change their eating habits dramatically in many cases. But I think it's safe to say that about 1% of the population of women, about 1% of women suffer from anorexia.
Right.
Okay. That's severe food restriction.
Right.
Okay.
Now, and men suffer from anorexia as well. The percentage rate is a little bit less than that.
But, yeah, about 10 to 15% of people with anorexia are males, around 10 to 15%.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we're leaving men out of this. It's just that it's a relatively small group that's within this range. And typically, men that fall within this group, we'll talk about this later this week, but they tend to be anorexic for reasons like athletics.
Right.
Or, I think of wrestlers, for example. They have to, they work
maintain
out.
Maintain their weights.
But they have to, they lose a whole lot of weight, you know, just before they're going for competition.
I'm wondering if, that's another story, but the Cleveland Clinic did a nice study. You know, these are three, I think, how many did we put in the show notes?
There's two.
But there's one from the Cleveland Clinic that I think helps to organize my thinking a little bit. And I didn't realize this. Eating disorders is the third most common disorder of adolescents. Okay, and that's pretty high rate. And there's about a about 3% in the Cleveland Clinic study. They said about 3% of adolescents have eating disorders, but 11% are close to having eating disorders. So they call them sub-threshold eating disorders. And in this study, about 1 to 4% of females had anorexia nervosa. Okay. Right. And about 1.7%. So I think it's safe to say somewhere between 1 and 2% across a lifetime of women have anorexia. Okay. And so that's probably a fairly accurate number.
All right.
Okay.
So we just threw a lot of numbers out.
Right.
So
that's for anorexia.
Right, for anorexia. So let's organize that very quickly. So anorexia nervosa is the third most common disorder of adolescents.
Well, eating disorders in general. Right.
And of eating disorders, anorexia nervosa, again, is one of the most well-known.
Right. One of the three.
One of the three most well-known.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And of those with anorexia nervosa, about 10 to 20% or so are men.
Right.
The 80 to 90% are females.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of females, in general, especially adolescent females, we're talking about 1%, maybe 1 to 2%, depending on the specific study. Right. 1 to 2% of all females will meet diagnostic criteria for anorexia nervosa at some time in their life.
Right.
Now, there are age differences.
Yeah.
So in this, in one of these studies, it talks about the idea that 13% of women over the age of 50 engage in some eating disorder behaviors. And so there are some differences over the lifespan, but it's really difficult to grab onto some really solid data when it comes to some of this. So anorexia nervosa, again, about 1% to 2% of all females meet criteria at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Right. So then you go into bulimia.
Bulimia nervosa.
We have many of the same issues, but here it's about 1.5%.
So a little bit more prevalent.
Right.
And one of the big differences between anorexia and bulimia, as we'll talk about later this week, would be your weight. So, and that's an often misunderstood concept, because many of the behaviors can be exactly the same between anorexia and bulimia. The difference is weight. So with anorexia, you have to be significantly underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And with bulimia, you are at normal weight or maybe even overweight to meet criteria for bulimia. So it's a little bit more complicated there.
Right.
But about 1.5% of American women suffer from bulimia at some point in their life.
Yeah, now we start to increase, and it's a fairly steep, it's a pretty good jump here, because now when we get into binge eating, now it's more common. So the binge eating, we're almost up to 3%, so it's about twice the prevalence for binge eating as we have for bulimia.
Right.
So anorexia is about 1%, bulimia is about 1.5%. And binge eating, the figure is 2.8%, but if you think in terms of 3%, so you have 1, 1.5, and 3,
right,
if we're using round numbers for binge eating. So obviously binge eating is much more common.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, again, the reason that we keep stammering a little bit is because the way that the statistics come out is they look at different things in different ways. So this is 2.8% of American adults meet criteria for binge eating disorder. We're not specifying women. We're not specifying adolescents. We're saying 2.8% of American adults suffer from binge eating disorder at some point in their lifetime.
Right.
So that, in many ways, makes it an even bigger problem because we're talking about 2.8% of the population as opposed to 1.5% of women.
Right.
So we're talking about a much larger group of
individuals.
Much
larger group, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now this next one's a little harder because it's new.
Right.
It's only been around since 2013, when DSM-5 was published. It's called Other Specified Feeding and Eating Disorders, OSFED.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really have good numbers on this because it is new and we haven't been collecting the data for very long.
Yeah.
Okay. There are some preliminary data, but they're not really meaningful because they're too new.
Right. And so the only other one that we're going to really say anything about is avoidant or restrictive food intake disorder.
Right.
And that is, again, that's a pretty new diagnosis as well. But it's mainly looking at children. The data so far mainly look at children.
Right.
It says that say anywhere between 3 and 5% of children suffer from avoidant or restrictive food intake disorder. And that can be for a variety of reasons. Perhaps it's because of sensory issues. It could be because of exposure, you know, just having the opportunity to try things like that. But these are children who restrict or avoid particular foods.
Right. This is a tricky one because parents will often laugh about this, that, well, my children lived on chicken strips and macaroni and cheese for, you know, 5 years. You have to be careful with this because if children become really food avoidant, they can enter malnutrition.
Right.
And malnutrition will change your body.
Yeah.
And you'll start to do you'll start to develop some very odd eating or non-eating habits. And so if you fear that your child is so restrictive, if the diet is so restrictive that they're not getting proper nutrients, you really should see a healthcare provider. Start with a pediatrician or see a nutrition, because this can be a dangerous circumstance if you get into malnutrition.
Right.
There are a few other. Can I put some other data up here?
Sure.
Okay. Were you gonna talk about those? No.
I was just going to mention that research suggests that about 10%, as we said, about 10% of men.
Right.
10% of people with anorexia and bulimia are men. And that, you know, certainly there's ideas that that's social and, and cultural and things like that. But there are some research studies that take all of these rates that we've been talking about and suggest that they're a little bit higher even.
Like probably a little bit higher.
Right. So for example, we were talking about bulimia was at 1.5% of women. There are some research studies that say that as high as 4%.
Right.
So
it's
frustrating because, you know, you look for strong data so that you can be, so that you can share that information, and it's just all over the place.
Right, it is. It's scattered because the studies, some include women, some don't include, some are just women, some are mixed. The whole transgender, that's another group with a different percentage. And so you have to be really careful, but I think if you do the 1, 1.5, and 3, 1%, 1.5%, 3%, you're sort of on safe ground. There are a few other data, though, that also help to put this in perspective. So the numbers that we're using are 20 million women and 10 million men will have an eating disorder in their lifetime.
Right.
So 10 million men will suffer from an eating disorder.
And 20 million women.
And 20 million women. But across time, we see a change too, because since 1930, when we started to collect a more accurate data, anorexia nervosa in adolescents, 15 to 19, has increased every decade. They don't give the percent of increase or the number of increase, but it's been increasing with every decade. And bulimia has tripled since 1988 to 1983. It tripled. So
You said from 1988 to 1983?
1993. Yeah, from 88 to 93. It tripled in just that short amount of time. So what these data suggest is that all of the eating disorders are increasing since the early 1900s. In addition to that, 40 to 60, and this is what's alarming about eating disorders, is that 40 to 60% of young girls, these would be preteens and young teenagers, express worry about their weight. They worry about their weight, okay? And that's puts them on a slippery slope. Girls who diet frequently, and I didn't know this, but anybody who diets frequently is 12 times more likely to become a binge eater. Okay, mm-hmm. So dieting is not without its risks. So if you are dieting frequently, or your children are dieting frequently, be careful with that, because that increases your risk of an eating disorder.
Well, and it makes sense, because we've talked about this many times before in other contexts, but mm-hmm. but on the podcast in the past, mm-hmm. and that is, anytime you intentionally, overtly restrict yourself from something, mm-hmm. anything, there is this very fascinating mm-hmm. drive to want that.
Right.
And
that's
so
right.
as soon as you tell yourself that you can't have ice cream, now all of a sudden you are craving ice cream.
Right.
And so when you go on some of these dramatic diets, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For many people, restricting some of these common foods from your diet only increases your desire for those foods. And
that's
so when
right.
you, as soon as you go off the diet, or as soon as you have a cheat day or something mm-hmm. like that, all of a sudden, then you're going to find yourself binging those foods.
Because we know from evolutionary psychology that motivation is a function of deprivation.
Right.
So you deprive yourself and your motivation increases. Mm-hmm. Later on in the week, we're going to talk about causes of eating disorders.
Right.
And there's a metabolic change that occurs when you diet too much, or mm-hmm. you restrict your calories too much, because there's an evolutionary mechanism in our body that if there's a food scarcity, your appetite decreases, because your body adjusts
right.
to less and less food until finally you stop feeling hunger.
Right.
Okay? But that's adaptive if you have a scarce, mm-hmm. Unpredictable food supply. That's a good thing.
Right.
Okay. But you can change your body's metabolism mm-hmm. by these severe diets, severe
right.
calorie restriction.
Yeah,
so you
absolutely.
Need to be careful.
Yeah.
One other thing, mm-hmm. it's Miss America season.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know.
It was on
okay.
a few days ago.
Great.
Okay. And
I didn't know we still did that.
Well, it's changed. Hopefully, we'll stop doing it soon. But it is changing. There's no more swimsuit competition.
Oh, I did hear that.
You
yeah.
did, yeah, that's yeah. been in the news. And they're trying to change it, and but it was on a few days ago. And listen to this. Body
okay.
mass index.
All right, BMI.
Okay, BMI. It has fallen. Body mass index has fallen over since the 1920s.
Okay.
The body mass index of Miss America winners has fallen from 22
okay.
to 16.9.
Okay.
Now, I have no idea what that means, but this is what it means, okay? Because I read it and I said, well, what does that mean? The World Health Organization mm-hmm. establishes that normal body mass index
right.
is from 18.5 to 25.
Right.
So they've dropped from 22, I mean from 16.
No, they dropped from 22 down to 16.9.
And 22 was low.
22 was on the low.
It was low.
Well, it was medium, right,
yeah.
right in the middle of a
mid-range,
BMI.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're sub-normal.
Right.
That's the new normal.
Right.
New normal is below average. Okay,
right.
the average, the healthy body mass index should be somewhere between 18 and 25. It's now 16.9% for Miss America winners. So this concept of how you should look is changing.
Right.
And we know that that's one of the triggers for severe dieting.
Right.
Okay.
And
who
you
are
know,
our models?
I think that, you know, it's important to point out, if none of you have ever calculated your BMI,
mm-hmm.
I think you'd be surprised at what a BMI of 22 would look like. I mean, for me, for example,
right.
because I looked at this,
right.
For me to be, if I was thinking about the range of
mm-hmm.
a weight that would put me in the normal BMI range,
right.
you know, near the low end would be like in the 150s, which would be about close to 20 pounds lower than what I am now.
And you'd have to lose 20 more pounds.
I would have
pounds.
To lose about 20 pounds.
Wow.
I couldn't imagine.
Right. I mean,
so
that's, we're talking about some significant
yeah.
reductions.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not insignificant numbers.
Right. And again, we'll talk more about that later this week, but right. It is some pretty staggering.
But when we talk about the statistics of this thing, mm-hmm. you can see the trends.
Right.
And as on the one hand, you see eating and feeding disorders increasing at the same time that the concept of what
right.
normal weight is,
right.
is falling fairly dramatically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Absolutely. So, all right, that is it for today. This was
a little bit longer than we wanted, but,
yeah.
but it we said it was, it's a complicated mess right now.
Very complicated.
So, be careful with the numbers, but keep an eye on this.
Definitely. So, all right, that's it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.